Welcome to Wild Tater Podcast. I'm Charles Hathaway. You may hear me occasionally refer to myself as Chaz Hathaway. That's because Chaz is also my name. It's the nickname that I've grown up with and always used, but I tend not to use it as much in this podcast simply because I'm also a musician, and if you Google my name, you'll get my music, and, you know, it's just a way of preventing confusion for those searching. So if you search for Charles Hathaway, I'm hoping you come across the permaculture stuff. Anyway, so today is the first episode where we introduce what I am learning and experiencing in this permaculture design certification course. And my hope in this is to provide any of you out there who are interested in taking a permaculture design course, give you an idea of what you're facing, as well as have a place where I can post many of my assignments, as is intended in the course to be done, and also to give kind of a breakdown of what permaculture is, especially for those who aren't as familiar with it, but are maybe just getting to know it and so forth. I'm hoping as we go along, this will get deeper and deeper. So this is the first episode of the Permaculture Design Course series of this podcast. And so as we go along, it will probably get more in depth. Okay, but I'm going to start out by introducing myself a little bit, because partly because the class encourages that, but also to give a little bit of background to you listeners about how I got into permaculture. And so first off, I have been out of school for almost 10 years. I got my associate's degree in music and then went on to study creative writing. And at the time I was studying music, I was single, living at home with my family. When I met my wife and we got married, that it was shortly after that I switched to studying creative writing. And even at that time, we were living in an apartment. In fact, we went through a couple of apartments before we found our first home. And while I loved gardening, I didn't have a lot to work with. I had to do everything in pots because we were in an apartment, and all you can do is, you know, have pots right outside your door and things like that. And that's what I would do as far as gardening was concerned. I'd grow these little trees and things that I'd try to keep small so I could continue to own them and so forth. But all growing up, I was very interested in plants and gardening and animals as well, just nature in general, the earth and so forth. I was the given an award in sixth grade for being the most environmentally aware student that my sixth grade teacher had. Prior to that, I told people I wanted to be a zookeeper, and I wanted I was collecting plants, and I had just these shelves of plants. You can ask my family. I was never very good at taking care of them, but I just absolutely adored plants and was collecting them. And when I'd go to the store with my mom, and we would get to pick out a 50-cent treat, you know, more often than not, I would pick donuts and or candy bars or whatever. But probably on average, at least once a month, I would buy a new little plant, 50-cent plant. And so that was just kind of my childhood. I loved plants and animals and nature and so forth. And my mom even allowed me a little patch, maybe 5 foot by 5 foot. I can't remember exactly how big it was. It might have been bigger, maybe 10 foot by 10 foot maximum. But it seems like it was more like 5 by 5 foot garden space to basically do what I wanted. But, you know, she kind of said, you got to do something with it or I'll use it myself, you know. And I was, I think my first year I did some bulbs, or no, maybe it wasn't even the first year. I can't remember. Anyway, I did flower bulbs. I did some gourds one year. I did several wildflower seed mixes in there, and had some alyssum and celosia. All different kinds of flowers. I just had a fun time in there. Essentially, I was doing little wild gardens in that area, and I distinctly remember one time after planting these wildflower seeds, them starting to pop up everywhere, all these little plants, and one of them looked like this little mimosa kind of thing, and I touched it, and the leaves closed just instantly, and I was like, "Whoa, so cool!" You know, I'd heard of such a plant, and so stinking excited about it. I wanted to make sure to save it from the elements, and so I dug it up, put it in a pot, and it died. Oh, I was so disappointed. Anyway, enough of my sob story. As a young gardener of, you know, I don't know, 10, 11 years old, stuff like that. But so I was always interested in plants, and it wasn't until we moved into our first house, which was a 1/10 of an acre home. It was really a sold out mobile park. These different houses had been mobile homes, and then whoever sold it off or whatever, they put it on foundations, individual properties sold out. And so it was a very small property, but I immediately took to growing things in there, especially the trees that I'd kept in pots in my apartments and so forth. And many of them survived and are still there today. Drive by the property, they're still growing. I'd take these trees from, they were rescue trees, most of them. I worked at a cemetery for a little while, taking care of the flowers and gardens and so forth, the grass. And I'd see a little tree growing up out of there, and I'd rescue it, take it home, and grow it in my pot until I could, you know, plant it in the house that we moved into. And I did. And many of them are still there. About a couple of years after, I think it was close to 5 years after we moved into our first home, I discovered the word permaculture. But let me give a little bit of my gardening experience in that yard. I did try some road gardens, you know, row of tomatoes, a row of this, a row of that. And it didn't really go all that well. I did find that things tended to go better when I would kind of let them do what they want a little bit. And I even had an area of the yard. It was shaded on three sides. And the non-shaded side was a north side. So it was only in the deepest summer that it would get much sun. But I noticed that my parsley and carrots and, you know, choke cherry tree and some everlasting sweet peas and stuff that I was growing, they did remarkably well when I just threw in the seeds and let them grow. And I, you know, everybody's talking about raised gardens, and I had tried a raised garden and it just wasn't working well for me. So I decided to do kind of a sunken garden and you know, as something of a rebellion against what everybody was telling me. And planted this parsley and things like that, and it did beautifully. I mean, it was gorgeous, and I was so excited. And the next year, I saw some of it popping back up again. I guess the parsley receding or whatever. I didn't know at the time it was biennial, but it did recede because the year after that, it came back as well. And what I was starting to realize is, wow, if I did this right, I could have kind of a perennial style garden, a garden that just kind of does its own thing. And I just come out when I need parsley or when I need carrots or whatever. And yes, I would water it, but otherwise I didn't weed it. I didn't, separate plants out or thin it or anything. Anyway, in all of this, I was, you know, I remembered my childhood experience of having a wild flower / vegetable garden. And I started researching, thinking, is there any way that I could do, is there any method out there that would be like a wild garden? Maybe, you know, a garden that's kind of like a forest, but it's growing fruit and vegetables and foods, basically. And so I started trying these different words, you know, wild garden, forest-like garden. And I came across a video by Jack Spearco, which, if you're following permaculture circles, is a very enthusiast a very strong enthusiast of permaculture, and he has a podcast, a daily podcast, that is doing remarkably well on survival topics, including permaculture. Anyway, I didn't know any of that at the time. I just came across this video, and he talked about how he was talking about some of the methods he'd been once employing years before to gardening and trying to grow crops and so forth, and it's kind of the wild approach that he'd taken, which is how I found this video, because of his wild approach to gardening. And he was talking to this friend, and his friend said, "Have you ever heard of permaculture?" And Jack's like, "Nah, I don't recognize that word." And he said, "It's basically what you're doing." And so, of course, Jack looks it up, and he's fascinated by it. And, of course, at that very moment of coming across that on the video, I look it up, this word permaculture. I don't think I'd heard it prior to that moment. And I looked it up, and I was just sucked in. It was like everything I was doing on steroids, or you might say the doctorate version, doctorate degree version of what I was doing. And I was like, "Oh, this could be fun." And so I just dug into it and started, you know, really studying and stuff. And at the time, I think it was probably fall, and I just dove into it, you know, hook, line, and sinker. I was hooked, I guess, you know, and so I started studying this stuff and trying to understand how different things work. And, you know, it was very much a design-based system. You put this tree here because it will feed this tree, which will feed this, you know, grass, which is providing the nitrogen for this, which is providing the, so on and so forth. And it was just so cool to me to think, you know, to have things structured in a way that looks and feels wild, and yet everything is there for a purpose, and it's doing what it does best, which is grow and you know, take from the soil and give back to the soil. And based on the things that you put around it, they're taking what is given, and you know, it's you're basically creating an ecosystem, terraforming, if you will. And so anyway, that just hooked me in it. And so I designed my property to be, you know, according to some of the things that I was learning. And one of my big challenges, and one of the things that I couldn't find much about, is permaculture designing with children, because all my children were small, and they go out and they pull any flower up that they see. And no matter how much I tell them not to, you know, they'll still take 40% of everything I plant just by pulling it up or stepping on it or whatever. And I'm just like, ah, you know, so I was trying to figure that out. And so I did an interesting thing. Is I dug up most of my front yard, making a hugel hill and hugel culture hill, which we'll explain down the line what that is, and with rocks up and down the sides of it that you could walk on. And I would make these rocks big enough, strong enough, that I would tell the kids, "You can walk on the rocks, just don't step on the dirt." And going up and down those rocks was fun, right? You know, the climbing on the rocks. And I put this whole row of large stones, like, you know, probably, oh, the size of, you know, 2 feet by 3 foot rocks and so forth, along the front of the yard that they could walk across. And then I dug up my yard such that it made trails of grass that kind of winded around these different ways, and encouraged my kids, "These are tag trails. And so you walk on this grass, and you can play games on it. Just stay out of the dirt, you know, stay out of the plants and so forth." And I even structured some of my elm trees that were growing up to grow into an arch that they could go under and through and so forth. You know, a 5 foot elm tree is not hard to shape, and within 2 years it's a 10 foot elm tree. And then you've got, you know, anyway, I just made it this fun adventure park for the kids and in all the dirt spaces, which was still probably 70% of the yard, I would grow all my, you know, plant guilds and all this stuff. And anyway, it was, while the overall structure, the following year as I tried this thing, while it was generally an overwhelming success, I was really excited about the result. I was also disappointed in several things, such as many of my vegetable guilds. You know, I had some that just grew like mad and did wonderful, others that just didn't grow, and all I got was weeds. And so, you know, there was still much to learn, I guess you could say, and so forth. But I had such a fun time with it that when the opportunity came for us to purchase a larger home, I got really excited. And I determined in looking for a home that I would not take anything less than an acre, which, you know, I'd grown up on a, you know, 20th of an acre, maybe quarter. No, I think it was 20th of an acre. You know, I'd had a 10th of an acre myself. My wife had grown up on 20th of an acre, something, give or take that. And I remember my grandparents, who had just a little over half an acre, it felt like they had their own park. I mean, it was huge. It was beautiful. It had, you know, fruit trees and gardens and all this stuff. And I was ambitious. And I thought, you know, if I could get a yard as big as my grandparents' yard, but I want to go even bigger because I want to design awesome and have a food forest and have areas to play and areas to whatever, you know. And so I determined I'm not going to take anything smaller than an acre. And so when we were looking for properties, we were, looking at the different things, and through a series of miracles, and I'm not even kidding about these being miracles, but we found a bank-owned property for $100,000 that was larger than anything I'd ever lived in, enough for all of our kids, if they wanted, to have their own rooms even. And I have six kids, you know. Well, now I have six kids. At the time, I had five kids, so we had enough for, you know, the five kids to each have their own room. We had a six-bedroom house. It's still a manufactured home, and so it's not, you know, one of these pioneer-style homes or anything like that, but it was a bank-owned property, and it was on 5 acres of land, and I was just like, to me, that was like owning a mountain. I mean, that was like nothing I could have imagined. I was so excited when the miracles fell into place to bring this about. And you know, we had a lot of help from heaven on that, in getting this property. And, you know, I could go on talking about the miracles. Anyway, you know, I'm really going much further with this than I intended to, but that is how I ended up with this property. And, you know, immediately I began, you know, laying some of the groundwork things for doing a full permaculture overlay of the property and making a food forest and so forth. And it did not take long for me to realize that my ambitions alone were not enough. I couldn't just plant a weed elm tree in the yard and expect it to grow. It would die. Even if I tried to water it every day, it wasn't enough, and it would just die, and then a deer would come along and eat it. And you know, I couldn't even get the most weedy, ambitious plants to take, because this is a, you know, mountain prairie desert. And so I knew it was going to take a little bit more. I was going to have to design more carefully. And anyway, so, in these efforts, I started, you know, digging swales and started, you know, planting things, and some things stuck and other things just died. And I would say it was about 10% of my real heavy efforts would, show any sign of sticking around, like they were going to work, you know. And I've still got some things, one or two efforts that I made from that first year, and the rest just gone. It's just gone, you know. And so digging the swales and things like that, shaping the landscape became a big part of it, getting it into a shape or structure that I could start working with, became, it's like, I don't have to do this right away, but I can't do anything else that's going to work. It was kind of the attitude I had. Anyway, and in that process, we decided we'd get a few chickens and ducks, just because I just thought that would be fun. And I knew that they were a great utility bird for, you know, tilling the land and you know, working manure into the soil and all kinds of things. And anyway, I got hooked on that. But we were losing birds to predators too. So I got a couple of geese. And that helped with the overland or the flying predators. But there were still other predators we had to deal with and so forth. Anyway, I ended up having enough success with the chickens, ducks, and geese that I found that I could, by opening my property up as a rescue as well as a, a monetary farm, able to buy, breed, and sell chickens, ducks, and geese. And have had a great time doing that. I did it big time last year. I think I'm going to slow back and do it smaller time this year so that I can focus more on the permaculture things. But that was kind of, you know, it was like the first year was, let's just try planting stuff and see what happens. Okay, now let's just try farming animals. And okay, now pull back. And now we're ready to, you know, I feel like I got enough of a grasp of what is and isn't possible based on what I've already got to start really designing. And so that's what I'm in the process of doing. And yes, I've dug several swales. I've, you know, got a small pond that is not a lined pond, so it, you know, it lasts for short periods, you know, and I just refill, it just has to be refilled once a week or something, and you know, the ducks are helping me line it with their feces, and so, but it's not a permanent, you know, fully lined pond, and it's only maybe 20 by 20 with a peninsula going right into the center of it with a tree in the middle, so I mean, it's not a huge pond as far as ponds go, but the birds love it, and this year I'm kind of letting it go dry a little bit during this winter, because I found that in the winter the water erodes quickly through frozen ground. It erodes very quickly through frozen ground, and so and that kind of works out because I don't need the pond to stay filled to water the plants. I only need water for the birds, and so I have a small kiddie pond for them to use in the winter, and then I have the big pond that I can start up in the spring. Anyway, going on and on. That basically gives you an idea of what my background is up to this point. I've studied a great deal, tried a little, and I'm ready to start diving into it bigger. Okay, and I will say, as my major goal in permaculture, My wide scope, what I'd love to have happen ultimately, is I would love to create my property into, or design my property into, a fully functioning self cycling food forest, such that it will be of worth enough to my children and grandchildren and great grandchildren that they will want to keep the property in the family and not get rid of it, because there will be enough food being provided in it in order to maintain the property indefinitely, so that anybody in the future that wants, for example, a grapevine, you can come get starts from this property. If you want to some trees that are well adapted to the climate, come take some of the newcomers and plant them. You know, if you want some fantastic apple varieties to graft into your apple tree, come on down, they're right here available. I want it to become a wild site and yet lightly managed. I want it to get to the point where I'm the ranger who looks after the place, but a place, have it be a place that supplies so much good that the family will never want to have it leave the family possession. And I don't even know if that'll happen. They may, you know, by the time they get there, they're like, yeah, it's just kind of wild and run over, you know, so we'll just sell it for what we can get out of it. And that may be what it comes to, but I would love to see it become something much bigger and better, something that is worth generational passing down. So, and my, in terms of what kinds of things I want on the property and how I want it to look and so forth, and I would like it to be such that it's providing a lot of food and fuel and so forth, but that if you were to vanish people off the earth for 100 years and then have them reappear back, totally untouched by humans, I would like it to be that they would look at this site and say, wow, it's still a food production ecosystem. That's my goal. I don't even know if that's technically possible or not, but, you know, you get the right trees established at the right level and the right perennial gardens going at the right level for the right climate, and there's no reason they shouldn't be able to perpetuate indefinitely. You go up in the mountains and there are raspberry bush families that have probably been there 100 years. Maybe not the exact same bushes, but they're passing on family to family and extending underground through their root structures to new areas so that when one gets flooded out, there's still a new one growing from the last one and so forth. That's what I'm looking for. That's what I want. And it'll take time, especially since we don't have a great big natural water system here. Yes, I have my own well. I have rights to the water within that well, but somehow it's got to be coming up, and just leaving the water on 24/7 isn't going to cut it if I don't pay an electrical bill. And so unless I have, you know, say a pump that's sun powered or, you know, wind powered or something in such a way that it can continue to pump water out of the well for, you know, centuries to come, which I don't know of any such system other than large tree systems, you know, large willows or whatever, which, you know, is part of the plan. Not sure exactly how to do it, but that's the point. I want to design it such that it's working for itself and perpetuating itself, a food system that can go on for generations. That's my goal, ultimately. And I realize that's going to take decades to establish. I plan on living a long time. So, and I'm hoping that to get it deep enough into the system that by the time I'm retired and start having back issues and, you know, bending issues and so forth, that the system will be pretty well cared for on its own. You know, I may just have to step out and harvest once a year, call the family all together to harvest and so forth. Anyway, and yeah, it sounds like the easy life, but it's not the easy life to design and implement. In fact, I think it's going to be a decade of intense work, and then another decade of moderate work, and another decade of light work. And I'm hoping after that, that I won't have to put in work in order for the system to be able to remain. Now, in order to harvest, obviously you got to come out and work, but I'd love to be able to just call my grandkids over and say, hey, come get fruits and vegetables, whatever you take, you can, or whatever you pick, you can take home. And so anyway, I would love to hear from any of you who are listening, your story, how you heard of permaculture, how you got into it, what is your goal with permaculture, and what are you hoping to accomplish? What are you hoping to learn? What are you hoping to grow out of this? So, Oh, and I did want to say one other thing about the focus of this podcast, because there are many permaculture podcasts out there, many of which are incredibly in-depth and so forth. But one of the struggles that I have is, as a poor person, I don't have a lot of money to work with. I can't afford to hire a truck to come and dig in my property and so forth. And, you know, while if I really design my, you know, system right and make some plans to have somebody come and so forth, I might, you know, do that. But it would be like once or twice a decade kind of a thing. I just don't have the money for that kind of thing. And so I've got to do everything I'm doing with very, very little money, if any. And most of the money that I will be spending, it will be from like chicken and duck sales. I mean, it's not like I'm going to be taking it from my vast fortune, which doesn't exist. Okay, I'm living way below the poverty line. And so my thought about this podcast is, why don't we have this be the podcast that, while it teaches all the permaculture principles and you know, especially with the principles that I'm learning from the permaculture design course, I want to make sure everything's covered, the earthworks, everything, but also I want to bring it back to affordability for those who don't have a lot of money. And so I thought maybe we could have the Wild Tater podcast be the permaculture podcast for penniless, poor, paupered people. And I know there's three words that are redundant there: penniless, poor, and paupered. But let's face it, some of us are poor, some of us are poor and penniless, and some of us are poor, penniless, and paupered. So we just don't have money to spare for these things. We're just having to spend any little bit that we can get on staying alive and food. But you know, if you've been really poor, that food kind of becomes almost an afterthought of how you're going to spend your money, because it's all about the bills that are, you know, I mean, if you're in debt, you got to get out of debt. You just can't afford to live that way. But if you're paying your mortgage, your electric, your water, and, you know, your garbage, and you have nothing left other than maybe enough gas to get to work and back, I think you might be able to relate to me in many ways, okay? And there are people much poorer than that. And in fact, that's one of the reasons that I think this subject is so important to be looked at from a poor, penniless, paupered point of view. Because most of the world that could really, really benefit from this, you think of the third world countries and so forth, where somebody maybe has a plot of land, maybe they have half an acre and that's it, and, you know, they don't have electricity or a phone, but they've got to find a way to supply the needs of their family. They are in a situation where they can implement permaculture principles to make their lives more bearable. Food doesn't have to be an afterthought, something that's like, well, if we have anything left, we'll get food. It's more like, it's more like, okay, you know what, if we spend just a little bit on these seeds, and then we have a shovel, we can make some real difference for our future in 5 years or whatever. So anyway, I'd like it to be focused around affordable permaculture, if that makes sense. So with that, I'm Chaz Hathaway, and this is the Wild Tater Podcast, the permaculture podcast for penniless, poor, paupered people. Thank you so much for listening.